Mode.
Well, hello and good morning, everyone. Good morning here from Finland, where it is 7 and 5 a.m. GMT. And some of you hardy souls in the United States, you know, in the Eastern or Central time zone, if you're with us, it's late, I realize. We had started to look at the triangles from the academic perspective. The Wednesday presentation in ASK gives us largely the meditation and the procedure that DK told us to use, and we'll always reference that because that's the really important thing. But this triangles structure is underlying so much of our planetary process, solar systemic process, the process of the sacred planets, and really it is a universal process. I have here the little bit of a map which shows us how ubiquitous, how much the triangle is found everywhere. Our monad is, after all, a triangle with will, wisdom, and activity, and at the very center of that is the essence of being. It's always the point within the triangle which is very important. Its threefold expression is the spiritual triad, which is kind of a it is like the personality of the monad. And then comes, in a way, the threefold, what can I call it, threefold, fourfold, fivefold soul body. Because a triangle exists between the mental unit, the astral permanent atom, and the physical permanent atom, and they are found, really, DK tells us, spatially, at the base of the egoic lotus. So there is a triangle, not entirely of permanent atoms, but of two permanent atoms and one mental unit. Then, of course, we've got the nine petals of the egoic lotus, and they are arranged in a way, in terms of a triangle, the knowledge petals, the love petals, and the sacrifice petals. If we go farther, though, we have a fourfold structure because we include the synthesis petals surrounding the jewel in the lotus. And then there is the jewel in the lotus itself, which makes things fivefold. But if you kind of look at the jewel in the lotus and its surrounding three petals, we have again the triangle with the point of monadic being in the center. So it's like the monad, you know, comes down and plants itself on the higher mental plane, and that is the presence of being within our egoic lotus. But now something is a little different when we deal with the four of the four of the personality. Now here we are entering into the dense physical body of the planetary logos. There's different ways of looking at this, but we have notice all the triangles that unfortunately I can't get rid of this. I can't get rid of this kind of black box, black directional box. But suffice it to say, we have a number of triangles, but the personality is fourfold. Now, why is that? The personality expresses the square and expresses the four elements, which are inherited from the previous solar system. The third, it's really the third solar system, but it's the first, well, actually it's the fourth, but it's the first major solar system. It had an emphasis on matter and mind, and it's all come over to us in terms of these 18 lower subplanes from one perspective, and then the 21 lower subplanes from another perspective. So we have fire, earth, air, and water, and we have our elemental nature, which is demonstrating. Now, a lot of these, they are moon chain lives, and when the moon chain process was interrupted, There was a transplantation into the Earth chain, which we are now inhabiting. And you know, quite a few of us are, let's just say, the more advanced thinkers and the people interested in esotericism, they actually came from the moon chain. So here we have a redemptive task. The work with the lower four is a redemptive task to redeem the four elements, which are energies, which are carried over under the third aspect from the moon chain and from the previous solar system. So the mind is fire. The dense physical plane below the dotted line here is the earth, fire, water, air, and earth, fire, earth, air, and water. The air is really the Buddhic plane from a certain perspective. The water is the emotional level, and the lower air is the etheric level. So we have the four elements in terms of the energies which came from the past. And here's the whole thing. The way of redeeming these elemental lunar first solar system energies is to create an etheric network of triangles throughout the etheric body of our planet. And let's remember, too, that all of this up here, these four planes are also etheric in the cosmic sense. Of course, there the triangles already exist, but the triangular formations have to make their way down into the dense levels, the dense physical body of our planetary logos, the lower 18 subplanes. And if we want to think of a transition, you know, there's a little ambiguity about these higher three subplanes on the mental plane. It's part of the dense physical body of the solar logos, the lower 21 subplanes. All this has to be redeemed. In the planetary sense, the 18 lower subplanes have to be redeemed and triangulated. And in the solar sense, there's a redemption required also of the structures on the higher three subplanes. So when we get together, you know, and we think of each other in triangular form and our relationship to each other and our relationship to the network, what we're really doing, since there are triangles at all different levels, and we're going to study about that, we're coming together as soul-infused personalities, relating to each other in such a way, not just as personalities, but having the soul flow through us and transmitting to each other and ultimately to the great network. We are transmitting first the light, the spiritual light, the light that we can generate, the light of the soul as it works through our personality. Then we're transmitting love, which works out as goodwill or love in action. And it's also a reflection of spiritual will, something from the first aspect. And eventually, in our triangles together, we will also be transmitting the will to good. Maybe the time for the coming of those triangles has not yet occurred, but that's what we are transmitting to each other and welding us solidly into triangulated groups, which can actually bring in the energy of the soul. Now, interestingly enough, the souls are called triangles. And I'm not just talking about the egoic lotus here. I'm talking about the true soul, or the true ego with a capital E, which is the spiritual triad. Because, you know, once the causal body is vanquished or incinerated, however it goes, there's different ways of destroying causal bodies, then the soul nature, the consciousness nature, focuses primarily in the spiritual triad, which we call the soul. So what we want to do is bring in eventually not only our soul energy on the higher mental plane, we want to bring in the spiritual triadal energy, which is going to focus through the etheric body of our planet and make of it eventually a sacred planet. So that's what we're doing, and on the way to becoming a sacred planet, we have to have sacred kingdoms. We have to have sacred elemental lives. In other words, look, we have to have a sacred humanity. And humanity is the macrocosm of the animal, vegetable, and mineral kingdom. And so the sacredness of humanity, and we can make it ever more sacred through triangulation, bringing in the higher triangular energies, will translate to the lower kingdoms, and they will come into line with the planetary purpose. So, you know, this is what the Tibetan said. This work must go on. He said, this work must go on. And he said it was close to his heart. And I've always felt about DK, just like the Buddha, you know, that there's a third ray monad there somewhere. If, with the Buddha, it was the third ray monad. That is confirmed in cosmic fire. But there are two monadic rays. Anyway, one of them was the third ray. And with Master DK, I felt too, he's very connected with that number three. And all of this is supervised. It's not shown here. But all of this is supervised on the highest of all planes, the Logoic plane, where we can find the council at Shambhala, with the Lord of the World being at the peak of the structure, and the three Buddhas of activity very closely surrounding him. So again, it's the one within the center of the triangle. And the three Buddhas of activity, they use these triangles as their emergency network, you might say. Humanity is transmitting a lot of energies which at the moment don't help the divine plan. But if we make significant structural changes in the etheric body of the planet, and especially in the etheric body of humanity, then the Buddhas of activity in times of emergency, we've heard this many times, can transmit their energy through the great network of triangles and inwardly correct certain dangerous tendencies which struggling humanity is likely to precipitate. We know the world has been destroyed more than once, and humanity mostly destroyed more than once in the Mauryan times, in Atlantean times, and we know that we're told that the attempt will be made to destroy the Aryan race by fire. Well, the Agni Yoga people think that World War II was pretty much Armageddon, and that the fire of World War II was the attempt to destroy the race. And okay, it didn't work, but we're not out of the woods yet. And there are still those intentions of sabotaging the divine plan. So when we work with triangles, we are bringing right into our everyday lives, right into our personalities, those redemptive energies. And that's what it's all about. And that's why, you know, every one of us should have at least a triangle to work with, and probably, you know, more than one if it's possible for us. And eventually, you know, there will be triangles between groups. Even now there are, and the great network will expand. The word has it that if there were 100,000 active living triangles, we could turn all of this process around and really conform to the divine plan. So we have a lot of work to do, and it's being done in various places by various people. It's all very good, and we're adding our little bit here as well. So that's, you know, by way of the introduction, which I gave 3 months ago, I'm told. It was November 15th that the first in this series of programs was given, but now there are about seven that lie ahead, and you can use the same link for each one. And Tuya sent out a new schedule for the ASK program, and these Science of Triangles webinars are included occasionally, like every other week and so forth. And when the time of the conference comes in the United States, there's a longer pause, but the link is good until probably the end of July, and then we'll see where we are. With what the Tibetan is given, we're certainly, you know, it's going to take a long time. He's given 100 pages on the various types of triangles that that exist on various levels and between levels. And this is found in esoteric astrology. It's a portion of the book which is not easy to understand, so we'll try to understand it together. And a number of people have gathered compilations of the scattered material concerning triangles throughout the book, and we can refer to that as well. But what I'd like to do is at least get started on the Tibetans section in esoteric astrology on page 407. Like to welcome you all. I'm very happy to see you present here. I imagine that a lot of us attending are from Europe or from Australia, New Zealand, because that gives us gives people the chance to wake up and not have it in the middle of the night. But some people, of course, maybe from the West Coast or even from the Mountain Time Zone, will be in a position to join us. So I see your names, and I'm very happy to welcome you here. And look, I'll tell you what, I have a suggestion. I'm going to talk about a few things. And what I would suggest is that you make notes as we go about any subject that on which you would like further light. Not that I necessarily can provide it, but anyway, a subject that you would like to explore more, or any question that you might have. DK begins this section with really a big picture. And you might wonder, well, why is he, you know, making such a big picture about this? It's because the principle of triangles is really universal, not just planetary, not just solar systemic, but truly cosmic and zodiacal, and gets into actually the one about whom naught may be said, who is our, our local cosmic, super cosmic logos. And if you want to see who this character is, about whom we cannot say anything, notice all these triangles here, and see that little green triangle there in the middle of the fourth sub-parabrahmic logos, I call it. That little green one there is our, at least in my interpretation, our one about whom naught may be said. And you can see there are 48 others. So, you know, the cosmos is vast, and we're just little mites walking around here thinking we're important, but in fact, we are, you know, really reduced to tiny little things, as DK tells us, microscopic man. That puts things in proportion, and this vast study that he opens up before us helps to, in the words of Master Moria, to wear away irritation or imperil through cosmic perception. To wear away imperil through cosmic perception. When you really have a big, big picture, the little things over which we tend to fuss about emotionally tend to be put in their proper proportion. So just keep your notes ready, we can discuss. I see that among us, you know, there's some people who are really good esoteric astrologers here, so you can give me a hand when the questions get too difficult, if they should. All right, so now here is the section starting on page 407, and I'll just read a little bit and comment a little bit, and then we'll stop, and you will have your opportunity to offer your thoughts, what may have occurred to you, you know, because if you think about it, how does light occur? It flashes between the invisible positive and negative poles. And so that triangular relationship is created of the sun, S-U-N, S-O-N, of light between the positive and negative poles. It's a very Mercurian kind of thing. And this whole study is, I think, very Mercurian. It's kind of esoteric astrological study. And Mercury is one of those planets that has a very strong higher monadic fifth ray and third ray in my estimation. So if you really try to look at the ultimate monadic ray of Mercury, I think it's the third. And I think with Master DK, you know, he said to be like Mercury, whereas Master KH is more like Venus. So the Venus-Mercury combination works between them. And this whole study will bring to the fore that important planet, which actually rules humanity as a whole. Mercury, the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio, rules the Buddhic plane where the human monads are now focused in their redemptive work as they hover above the lower levels of expression, which have to be redeemed. So Mercury is very important in this particular study. So he's carrying on here a little bit in terms of the esoteric astrology book. And I realize, of course, that not all of us are esoteric astrologers, but, you know, even Alice Bailey was not an esoteric astrologer, but she didn't do so much the personal astrology, right? But she learned enough about the planetary astrology and the solar systemic and cosmic astrology to see its application to the big picture. And we all meditate at the time of the full moon. It's in a larger sense, and not strictly personal issues are involved. So we can subject ourselves to the widening of this, of our perspective, by studying this portion of the book, and then I'll bring in other things as we go along. We have been working, says the Tibetan, for some time now upon the third part of our study, the zodiac and the rays. This entire section deals with the nature of esoteric astrology, and under our introductory remarks, we considered very briefly the significance of esotericism as a whole when applied to modern astrology. You know, it's still not really assimilated, the esoteric approach to astrology, but a few of the astrological organizations are allowing it in and allowing that perspective to be presented. We considered the three crosses, you know, where these are crosses of consciousness, and we're either on the mutable cross, the fixed cross of the soul, or the cardinal cross of the spirit. So, you know, we're all crucified on some cross or other, and as good disciples, we should be happy that we're crucified on the fixed cross and experiencing, what are the great incentives that are offered here? A blinding light, fiery pain, bitter woe. Well, that sounds good, doesn't it? And yet liberation. So it goes from Taurus to Leo to Scorpio and finally to Aquarius, where we achieve liberation. So we referred to the crosses very briefly, he says, and the relation of the signs to the centers. If you really want to see what that's all about, go to page 517 in this book, and you'll see how each one of your chakras is ruled by a particular planet, or maybe by more than one, depending upon what stage of evolution you find yourselves at. We gave most of our time, however, to the analysis of the meaning of the interrelation of the 12 signs of the zodiac to each other. Now note this, this is the basis of a number of triangles that are created. The 12 signs to each other, to the planets, and to the earth. So there are triangles that are taking place all on the same level. It might be zodiacal, it might be planetary, it might have to do with intraplanetary triangles, and there are those that span the different levels. So a zodiacal triangle, a zodiacal point, a planetary point, and an intraplanetary point, let us say. Now, we begin to take up the third and most important part of this astrological study. Wow, you know, I mean, as students of astrology, we normally might not think that, but here is that which underlies the entire process that we're dealing with. The third and most important part of the astrological study, the science of triangles. Okay, so, you know, whether you're willing or unwilling, we're going to go into some of this esoteric astrology. So the study will fall into three parts, as I earlier indicated. Triangles of energy. which are constellations. Well, let's just say we're all very familiar with the triangle of the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades. Those are called the three great constellations, but from another perspective, Sirius is a blind for something even more potent, and only at one point does DK mention it. It's the Great Bear, the Little Bear for Sirius, and then the Pleiades. They have the rays 1, 2, and 3, and so they're triangles on the same level, more or less. Triangles of force, which are the planetary triplicities. Now, I could give you an example of what that would be like. Let's say there is a triangle where we're dealing with Mercury, Venus, and the Earth. That's an important planetary triangle. Here's another planetary triangle. We're dealing with the Earth, Mars, and Venus. It's a little bit lower in its significance, but those are the way the planets triangulate. The three synthesizing planets, there's a triangle there, obviously, of Uranus, first ray, Neptune, second ray, and Saturn, third ray. Those are the eldest, in a way, of the planets, but not necessarily yet the most unfolded in our particular solar system. And then the triangles and the centers of force. Well, in the planetary, we have a major planetary triangle that we always have to consider, and that would be humanity, hierarchy, and Shambhala, third ray, second ray, and first ray, Shambhala. And right within our own etheric body and within our astral body and partially within our lower mental body, we have other triangles. And, you know, you're familiar with the major triangle, the head center, the heart center, and the throat center. And there are many, many, many more, and they all have their significance, and they all have to contribute or to the circulation of energy which makes the etheric body complete. So these are all on the same level, and DK will be touching on these. Now, there are just so many that it's hard to understand the significance of all of them, and even when we think we understand the significance, we're just scratching the surface here. But at least the whole process of evolution is carried on by the transmission of energy from one point of a triangle to another. Even the way our egoic lotus unfolds, or our centers unfold, depend upon our monadic ray and whether the third aspect of divinity comes first and then the second and then the first, or whether stimulation of the third aspect and the second aspect come together, and so forth. It's all part of this, what I can call this law of mutation. Law of mutation. Maybe I'll just kind of put it down here. Note the law of mutation of constant intelligent evolutionary change. And we're all in this, and it's so very complex that it's hard to say where we really stand. But this is what keeps everything rotating, revolving, relating, and in a bewildering to us kaleidoscopic fashion, but all under a tremendous law from great and higher sources. So, you know, sometimes we think, okay, well, we're unfolding our chakra system according to triangles, but the manner in which we do it is very individual and depends upon our ray structure and, above all, upon the monadic ray. And you remember that the monad itself is a triangle. So if you're a first ray monad, it's the will part of the monad which accentuates everything below itself. And will wisdom, if you're a second ray monad, the wisdom aspect comes in, and activity for the third ray monad, and the stimulation of how you unfold in a triangular fashion is all hanging from that point, that triple point, which we call the monad. Okay, I have analyzed here the point reached in our studies, We always have to know where we came from. And I'm anxious for you to know as far as possible just where we stand in our attempt to throw the light of esoteric understanding upon the present entirely exoteric study of astrology. Well, at least DK has corrected that, and many of us have, even when we're meditating at the time of the full moon, we really are getting into the esoteric side of astrology, even though we might not be astrologers in the complete sense of being dedicated to that particular study. Before, however, proceeding with our somewhat difficult theme, okay, there are a few words which I would like to say in reference to our general attitude and certain things of which I would like to remind you. Now, you know, I worked through the Esoteric Astrology book page by page, line by line, almost word by word, and that is found on Makara. So this whole section has certain explanations on Makara, and I've gotten through it all, but as is the case, you know, this is a webinar. We're going to discuss these things. And what I did before was not. I just presented my own thoughts on it, and there was no audience or there were no participators. So, and always what one says will be different from what one has said before. So this is a fresh approach to give us more of the academic understanding of why triangulation is so very important within our little microcosm and within the increasingly large macrocosms in which we live and move and have our being. But let's remember, it's a somewhat difficult theme, and he wants to get us oriented, and he says it's the most important part of the whole study of astrology, and very close to his heart, and that the work here must go on. In no place, he says, have I attempted to give any of the mathematics connected with my statements in the series of astrological studies. So obviously the mathematics do exist, and it's way beyond the human mind to know what they are at this moment. Certain basic changes in the orientation of the Earth's axis are now taking place. And, you know, we would be completely unaware of these unless we were esoteric astronomers or studied the Tibetan. And these will throw much confusion into the computations of astrologers. These changes are proceeding slowly and progressively according to cosmic law. Well, we do know there is the top-like gyration of the axis of the Earth as it spins in kind of a cone-like formation and changes the stars, which are our pole stars. But he's also talking about other kinds of movements, a movement called nutation. It begins with an N, and the planetary logos is himself, according to law, changing his orientation to the cosmos which surrounds him, and we as tiny little cells here are going to be involved in those changes. So according to cosmic law, these changes proceed. And while they're in progress, accuracy of computation and deduction is unattainable. Well, tell that to your average astrologer. He or she won't be happy. When the orientation and the pointed direction of the Earth's pole has again been stabilized, the new conditioning mathematical figures can again be ascertained. So we're in a very fluid time, you know. Pisces is changing into Aquarius, and from the 25,000-year perspective of the great Platonic years, the great Platonic year of Pisces is changing into the great Platonic year of Aquarius. It's a time of much fluidity and uncertainty, and we see this working out in our human relations. So we cannot get accuracy at this time, but the new figures will be emerging. There is indeed, he says, has been no true accuracy in any of this since ancient Egyptian days, and not just recent Egyptian days, but ancient Egyptian days, which I assume takes us back some tens of thousands of years. Madame Blavatsky has a different estimation of the pyramids and their age as temples of initiation than the modern archaeologists, and puts them back 60, 70,000 years ago, maybe more, whereas we have such a short-term myopic view of their origin, maybe 4 or 5,000 years ago. So anything now possible along these lines can only be regarded as approximate. But approximate is good enough for us, I would say. And therefore, certainty in analysis, prediction and interpretation is not possible. The whole subject is one of the Well, we're really barking up quite a tree here. The whole subject is one of the greatest obscurity and quite incomprehensible to the average astrologer and certainly to the average student. And Master DK reminds us we should regard ourselves as the average student. Otherwise, there's danger of separatism, pride, and all kinds of things that will really stop us and others. I would remind you, however, that several times in the great life cycle of Earth, there has been changing pole stars. Well, I mean, it's constant, you know. But there's also the whole sense of the pole bowing towards the ecliptic. And there are certain Egyptian statues and obelisks and things of that nature which show that the pole of the Earth actually lined up and was on the same plane as the ecliptic. And that would be huge changes. When you look at Uranus, actually, it looks like the bow has been well below its own ecliptic. And when you look at Venus, it's all the way down. So there's this up and down motion, as well as the gyrating motion. There are many. I studied with an astrologer by the name of Charles Jane. He was very good, and he had somehow a mental mastery of all these different motions through which the planet went. And it's pretty much according to the will of the planetary logos that these changes are taking place, as the planetary logos serves the will of the solar logos, and on and on. So several times in the great life cycle of Earth, there have been changing pole stars, and our present pole star has not always held the position, that position of pole star, and even science here is recognizing that. So, you know, this is all a kind of foundation for the cosmic approach he wants to give us in relation to the great triangles and the flows of energy and the energy centers that are involved in the triangles. So, we have to be patient here. You can say, well, what has this to do with me lining up with two other people and sending light, good love and goodwill, and even the will? Well, it's the very foundation of everything that we are doing. We want to facilitate sacredness in ourselves, in our groups, in our nations, in humanity, in all the kingdoms of nature, and finally in the planet itself. Triangles, the work of triangles, is the facilitation of sacredness. But the sacredness comes from great sources which are already triangulated according to the three aspects of divinity. So we have to learn how to receive them, and even the Antikorana is a triangle, which seems a little strange. Let me show you this. If you look at, can I get there? I have to go the other direction. Yeah, there it is. Look, this is the triangle. This Antikorana is threefold, and DK is mostly dealing with the direct visualized approach, which he is presenting us with, but there are two other aspects of this Antikorana. So even that is triangulated. Anyway, let us just say that the idea of the triangle, the dynamics of the triangle, the way we relate to other people and to other factors in our local planetary system, all of this has to be ruled by the triangle. It's going to take us a while to do that, but okay, we can manage. At each of the great shifts in the Earth's axis, there has been upheaval, confusion, and cataclysm preceding reconstruction, stabilization, and relative quiet. Does this sound familiar? We're going into this kind of period right now, and it's reflected in all areas of human life. Of these macrocosmic events, there are similar microcosmic correspondences in the lives of both humanity and the individual man. So, you know, if you're going to take the first initiation, and Vulcan and Pluto, both powerful first-rate planets, are going to be prominent in your life, there's going to be upheaval and confusion and destruction. So all the initiations that we apply for are preceded by periods of destruction, so we can have a new formulation of energies which characterize the initiation. And so he goes on to say, hence, the present world crisis, though precipitated by human error and sinfulness, by past karma and emerging idealism, which works against all those old pulls, responsive to the development of the intellect and, let's see, where am I here, if I can get down here, the intellect and the appearance of the intuition is basically the result of much greater and vaster combinations of force currents and in macrocosmic relations. Frankly, you know, everybody, we're going to have to learn to work as esotericists with energy. We can study all this stuff till we're blue, but until we can actually sense the energies, direct the energies, manipulate the energies, and create what the divine plan needs by using those energies, we are just academic occultists and esotericists, and we are not really practical occultists and esotericists. So, but first, of course, you have to know what's there, and that's what we're doing here, and then comes the opportunity to actually send and direct and usefully employ the energies we now recognize as real. Okay, let's see maybe a little bit more. Please be patient with this introductory material. It's the really big picture. Briefly, it might be said that the following cosmic and systemic causes are responsible for the present world crisis and the present difficult world situation. Now, you begin to sense some triangles here. There's certainly a triangle operating between the great star Sirius, our solar logos, and our tiny little planet, the Earth, which for some reason the Tibetan tells us is closely related to Sirius as well. So there's a triangle between different levels of expression, vastly different levels of expression. So why is this world crisis in which we are all emerged and in which we may be even more immersed than we want to be in the coming years? Why is it occurring? Okay, number one, a welling up of magnetic force on Sirius, which produces effects upon our solar system and particularly upon our Earth because of its close relation to Sirius via the hierarchy, which is related to Sirius. Now, let's see if I can remember that triangle. It is Sirius, Scorpio, and Mars. And it's a triangle which brings us the opportunity to enter the hierarchy through the great battle and triumph and the subduing of the elemental nature we can enter. Now, you know, you kind of wonder, look at those stars in the constellation. It's called Scorpius, really, Scorpius, but we call it Scorpio. Look at those stars. They are immense. They are huge. They are distant. They are far more powerful than many stars that are close to us. And there is a lord of every constellation, the lord of the constellation Scorpius. Is it so that this tiny little dwarf star Sirius, which is, 33 times brighter than the Earth approximately, is it possible that this is more important than that vast constellation Scorpius with its really potent stars, among which, someone can help me here. It's like Antares. It's vast star. Maybe some of you have seen the pictures where the different stars like our sun and still bigger stars and still bigger stars are put one within another. And it's like Antares eats them all. You know, Antares is so vast, more powerful than Sirius. But it's a question of relativity, really, if you think about it. It's not that Sirius is more powerful in this kind of triangle. Let us call it the triangle of Sirius, Scorpio, and Mars. It's not that it's really more powerful. It's only that it is relatively more powerful. Now, we have a way of measuring the brightness and energy of stars. We call this magnitudinal measurements. And the lower the magnitude, the brighter the star. But, you know, that can be figured out. Let's just say there's such a thing as relative magnitude and absolute magnitude. Now, the absolute magnitude of a constellation like Scorpius is immense. But relatively, it is not as powerfully impacting the Earth as Sirius, a much lesser star in terms of the absolute magnitude, is. Sirius is a lesser star, absolutely, but in terms of relativity, it's the brightest star in our local cosmos system. So it's more important to us. You know, well, it's just the same way. You have your mother and your father, and they're really important to you, and maybe there's a leader of the country who is absolutely more important or more powerful than they are, but that leader stands far away from you, so his or her impact upon you is less than that of your parent. So this is about relative and absolute, and you will find that in some of these triangles that we're going to study, you kind of wonder, how is it that a source which is absolutely less powerful is put in the primary condition? Well, position, rather. So here we have Sirius in the primary position, then Scorpio, and then Mars. Okay, so a welling up of this magnetic force, and via initiation, it's drawing all human beings and many types of monads towards itself. You know, I, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me. It's the Christ is like Sirius. Christ is like Venus. And there's even a triangle, you might say, between Sirius, Venus, and the Christ. We have all of these interwoven triangles of different levels, different vibratory levels, and we have the other triangles all on the same level. Okay, what else is causing the present world crisis in which we are deeply immersed? A shift in the Earth's polarity due to the pull of a great cosmic center. Oh, and which one is that? This powerfully affects the Earth's orientation and is responsible for the present earthquakes. Next 1,000 years, many, many earthquakes. Some people have talked about the California Islands. You kind of wonder what it would take in terms of cataclysms to produce that. And for the volcanic eruptions and the many earthquakes during the past 150 years, and that's a sixth ray cycle. When you see that 150 or 15 or 1500, you can associate that with the sixth ray. So there is a great source. What is it? What is it? What constellation is it? Or is it a star? I can't say with certainty. That is affecting the Earth's polarity and orientation. He does talk about Betelgeuse, a very powerful red giant in Orion, and how it is related to the Earth. But I wouldn't want to speculate on what this cosmic source is. It could be even a hidden or etheric constellation. So these are producing the upheaval, the turmoil. What else? For the turmoil in which we find ourselves, the great sweep of the sun around the greater zodiac, a period of 250,000 years, or a complete round. Notice the generic nature of those terms like round. You know, it can mean a smaller cycle here on Earth, or a great round of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. It's a monadic cycle, a complete round. Came to an end, amazing, when the sun entered Pisces over 2,000 years ago in the smaller sense. So, you know, we might call this 250,000-year thing a super-Platonic year. You know, there's some calculations there, but they're not important right now. Let's just say that well, I'll read what he has to say. The process of passing out of or entering into a particular sign and cyclic influence covers a period of 5,000 years where this greater round or cycle is concerned. And because of the overlap in what would normally be a 300,000-year cycle, you come down to 250,000. This period of 5,000 years covers the complete cycle of transition until complete freedom to function under the inspiration of the new sign is completed. And we're always doing that, you know. Even in our little human progress, we're never quite free of our past until we're free of our past. And there's going to be a transition period here where we are being pulled in two different directions. So we are entering Aquarius in terms of the precessional age of about 2160 years, or sometimes they say 2000 years, sometimes they say 2500 years. It's right around in there, around the 2000 number. And we're not free of Pisces yet, but by the end of this 21st century, we will be more and more in the clear. The new age really begins, says the Tibetan in a letter to Roberto Assagioli. The vernal equinox will line up with the 30th degree of Aquarius, and in the year 2117. So all of these, it's incredible to me that a 250,000 year period came to an end at the same time that the sun was entering Pisces approximately 2000 years ago. So when you think about the appearance of the Christ, of the Lord Maitreya coming out and trying to help humanity move into the fifth kingdom of nature, it was superbly timed. And this has to be, of course, in the mind of Sanat Kumara and our planetary logos. This science of cycles is incredible. And it is located on the third level of the atmic plane, the atmic plane being a triangular plane. Its symbol is the triangle. It's ruled by Saturn, the third ray. And this great science of cycles is on the third subplane. So it's all a bunch of threes here. Even astrology is a third ray science. So there's a tremendous change of energies. Now, I don't know whether these 250,000 year periods, can we connect them with signs of the zodiac? I'm not sure. I speculated upon that. It is possible that it is so. All right. And here's another one as well. The passing out of our sun, out of the sign Pisces into the sign Aquarius, I mentioned it, is another of the conditions bringing about the present confusion. Well, we can't deny that we are confused. It's a small precessional age of more exactly 2160 years. And by the way, if you go into the secret doctrine and you study the yugas, you know, the golden yuga and the threefold yuga and the double yuga and finally the Kali yuga, you will find that they're all based upon the number 432. Well, 2160, 216, forget the zero, is exactly one half of 432. So all of these numbers, which give us the progress of the development of man and the planet and the solar system, they are all exquisitely calibrated to each other. Madame Blavatsky does think that the Hindu chronology is accurate. So out of one sign into another, and the confusion of forces in the solar system, which is also taking initiation, is notably affecting our planet. There's some kind of a relationship between our planet as the base of the spine center of our solar logos and our great solar god. It's a very close relationship, and our planet is passing through heavy initiations, and so is the solar logos. In the process, in the process of passing from sign to sign, for instance, transcending out of Pisces into Aquarius, as is now the case, the period covered is 500 years. These are sort of second ray transitional periods because the number 550, 500, 5,000, 50,000, all that, they govern second ray cycles. That's the number connected with the second ray. So these are the issues causing the tremendous confusion. Well, goodness, and there's even more. Well, I have to finish that much, and then we can talk a little bit about these things. These are points which astrologers would do well to consider. I would remind students again that when speaking of signs, I am referring to the influences of the constellations as they are represented by the signs. Concentrated influences. I think there's a statement about the difference between the galaxies of stars and their concentrated influences in the signs. I think, I can't remember exactly, but I think page 611 in this book. calling to your attention that in the great evolutionary process, and owing to certain shifts and astronomical, astrological discrepancies, the sun is not in the constellation to which a particular sign refers at any given moment. You know that, factually speaking, our sun is presently, if you could see through it, you would see the background of stars in early Pisces, approaching later Aquarius, when the sun is in the sign Aries. So the one of them is called the tropical zodiac, and the other is called the sidereal zodiac. And there's a whole vast discussion there, but suffice it to say that when we are in Aries, such as in the north, we're in the springtime of Aries, we do receive the energies of the constellation Aries because of the special relationship between the constellation and the sign. All right, here's one more factor causing disturbance. Another factor little known is that the moon today is disintegrating with increasing rapidity, and this necessarily affects the Earth and produces terrestrial results. And I think we're told that by the end of the seventh round here in our planetary scheme, probably a scheme round, which involves going through chains, the moon will be completely disintegrated, and the malevolent backward pulling effect of all the misery that there took place and all the mistakes that there took place will be lifted, and the Earth will be much freer, and maybe even by that time what we call a sacred planet. So students would find it of interest to make the following. Now, I think we'll let off here. This will be enough for the moment. So we'll say this will be the end of, what should we call it, the science of triangles. And this is really number two. These are occasional webinars to give us the bigger picture of the kind of meditation that we practice. And I'm not sure what page we're on in terms of, it looks like page 410. So this is ending in esoteric astrology from pages 407 to 410. And when we next meet, I think it's in a couple of weeks, and you can use the same link if you like. This is the beginning of Science of Triangles, Scott, okay, number three. And we'll begin with page 410. And I think if we add, it's always on a Saturday. And look, if we're on an evening ask schedule, then it's Saturday morning, like we are here. If we're on a morning ask schedule, then it's in the evening on Saturday. It's pretty easy to understand. And I think we sent you a Tuya created recently a schedule for all of the ask presentations. And I'll tell you what, Brett or Joe, if you have the link for that, I would appreciate that you put that in the chat box so that we can, people can pick that up if they have not already received it in the mail, but you should be receiving it in the mail or should have received it. Okay. So, friends, I know this is daunting stuff. This is, for some of you who have not studied esoteric astrology and the rays and cycles and all that kind of thing, it looks like, you know, impossible or something. But Master DK is the expert in these kinds of energies, and he knows more about these planetary, these zodiacal, astrological, and ray cycles and creative hierarchies than any of the other masters at this time. So this is his specialty. And naturally, when he writes books on these subjects, you know, he knows a lot. And it's quite okay if we learn just a little from the lot that he knows. But we, you know, if you think about the incredible wealth of knowledge that he has given, okay, it's beyond belief. And you know, the older I get, the more I appreciate what he has given, and that it's just not fathomable for all of us. But we have to be brave. If we have a question, There are no questions that cannot be asked, and there are no statements that cannot be made, because every question asked, every statement made, can prove the basis of some increase of light. So, therefore, I'll do one thing. Today is, what day is today? 18. So it'll be the 4th of March, I believe, for our next meeting. And Joe or Brett or BL, please correct me if I'm incorrect. 4th of March, 2017. So now, I hope the casualty list has not been too great, and that those who signed up with us have not been driven away by the subject. So please, your thoughts, your comments, your statements are welcome at this point. So just raise your hand or write out a question or write out a statement, whatever you'd like to say, and I'll do my best to kind of think about it with you, and other people may have ideas and so forth. So the floor is open to you, and I'm looking for your hands or for a question mark that will rise up or for a statement that you wish to make. And always remember this, that what a human being has done, a human being can do. So if you ever think that you're ignorant in a certain area of esoteric knowledge, one day, if you want to be, you will be a master of that field of knowledge. But the journey of 10,000 miles begins with a single step. So just be brave if you have any thoughts that you would like to share. All thoughts are welcome. Okay. Nicholas, all right. There we go. Okay. Nick, go ahead. Oop, you're on self-mute. You have to unmute yourself in order to be heard. So I think, there you go.
All right.
Okay.
Concerning triangle you referred before about Sirius, Scorpio, and Mars, and when you commented that the star in Scorpio is Antares, it is quite interesting that the origin of the world is the opposite of Mars.
Yes, Antares. Yes, it is.
Yeah, this is quite significant concerning that it has been traced the opposite of Mars. So if we consider the Mars as a lower aspect, the higher aspect of that is really rooted in Antares in Scorpio.
Yes, I agree. I agree that that is the case. Mars as a non-sacred planet, less sacred than the Earth, has so much to learn, but it's along the line that Antares can teach. This Antares being is just immense. But if you think about it, the Lord of the constellation Scorpius is even a more vast being. And there's certain stars, I forget their names now, but they're in the tail of the Scorpion, which are also hugely powerful, but very distant. So yes, there is that relationship between Antares and Mars, the enemy of Mars, as it is sometimes called, or the enemy of lower desire, and maybe great heights of heroism and valor and those kinds of abilities will show up through the Antares influence upon our planet. So thanks for bringing that up. It's very interesting, the connection there. And it's kind of a reddish star too, isn't it? The Antares. If you look at Scorpius, it has the Antares has a certain redness to it, just the way Mars does. So, you know, Mars is learning along the way from that great being Antares, even though it's rather opposed to Antares at this time. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Nick. Anything else? Okay. Thank you for that thought. Other thoughts, friends, just feel free. Just come in. Look, that's how we do it. It's a mosaic. You throw in X, I throw in Z, someone throws in Y. All these little points are thrown in. They may not look like they have a relationship to each other, but then suddenly Mercury does its work and constellates and configures all of these apparently unrelated points of knowledge, and pretty soon you have a whole point of view. So we all make our contribution, and you're welcome to do that. Okay, Vera. Okay, I see your hand. Go ahead, Vera. Yes.
Yeah. Hello, Michael. Yes, generally about the dynamic of the energies within triangle, comparing to, say, a square, four forces, which is more down, earthly, and less mobile and dynamic. So I am interested in more general application of triangles, even, say, in groups, as we work in different groups. Can you say something about that?
Well, you know, one of the things that was interesting here, Vera, I wish I had the picture. You know, I should have thought of this, but it will come up. It's a diagram that DK made of how to arrange nine people with a central triangle and a triangle at each apex, at each vertex of the central triangle. So basically there were four triangles in all. And what is important is that when DK gave responsibilities and made tried to explain the arrangement of people within his groups of nine, he always triangulated the people that were in the group. So there was a central group of three, and then at each vertex or each point in the triangle, that person in the central three related to two others. So altogether, you had nine people and four triangles. So this was on his mind as he assigned people certain roles within their groups. Now he would say to one, you're the head center, you're the heart center, you're the throat center, that kind of thing. And they would have to uphold that particular responsibility. So, you know, when we get into our groups and we begin to triangulate with other people, not that we have, you know, some grand design about doing that, we are facilitating the flow of energy within the group and making it more susceptible to the flow from what we call the triangles or the soul. And I think, you know, that in maybe, who knows, if we got into ashramic relations and the master as the monadic point was looking at the spheres of responsibilities of the various members of the ashram, I suspect that there would be triangulations operating in the optimal functioning of such groups. So I think this is something for the future, but I think what we can do is start to relate to each other in triangles and take out that 15 minutes or half hour a day or however long it takes, and really, with deep intensity of feeling, put ourselves into the process and help the regeneration process. And then it will be even easier later to make up these groups in which triangles are the foundational structural element. Does that assist a little bit, Vera? I hope a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it did. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Vera. Other thoughts, friends? Other thoughts? Okay, wait a second. I see a... Okay, so we have Celandria here. And go ahead, Celandria.
Hello?
Hello, hello. You're on. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes. Can you not hear me, Celandria? Can you not?
I can hear you. I'm sorry. I am new to this site, and I accidentally raised my hand, and I don't know how to unraise it. So.
Okay.
I will say that am really, I'm in Hawaii, and I really appreciate this work, and I'm looking forward to more of it. And I already feel it working. Thank you very much.
I'm glad, Celandria, that it's useful to you. You know, sometimes when I, you know, you look at these beautiful little diagrams of the Earth covered with triangles. And it'll all look so neat and patterned and, you know, symmetrical, as if this is what it'll be. But suppose I were in a triangle with you. I'm here in Finland, you're in Hawaii, and maybe there's someone else in Siberia. You know, when you really look at what the triangles are factually, they are of all different shapes and sizes covering the Earth. The symmetrical picture is not accurate at all, but as we link up with people, no matter what they are and where they are, because we feel this connection with them, finally, a final picture of symmetrical beauty will emerge. But we have to do a lot of work before that is possible. Anyway, very glad you're here with us. And gosh, is it a reasonable time of day in Hawaii? That would be wonderful.
It's still okay. It's I think around 8:30, something like that.
That's reasonable. Yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah. Some people in the United States are talking in their sleep. So anyway, appreciate your presence. Thank you, Solandra. Okay.
Aloha.
Thank you. Thank you. Other thoughts, friends? Other thoughts? Questions? Whatever?
We have a written.
Okay, Antoinette. Okay, let's see what we got here. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, got it. Brett, thank you. Excuse this. Thank you for bringing greater understanding of triangles. If one of the members do not want to continue with the work, do we replace that member, and shall we flow energy to the point? I think yes, if you have a good relationship, a deep, loving, lighted relationship with the member who has remained, I think that the two of you can evoke another member. And yes, until that happens, you can imagine a generic point, stay in relationship with each other, and feed the generic point until someone shows up to embody it. These are the practical details, but you know, DK tells us how important it is to have depth of feeling. He uses those words, depth of feeling, when we do this triangles work. So we have to take the time to really feel that, instead of just kind of like running through, XYZ, you know, like that. You really have to tune in with the people in the heart sense, in the soul sense, in the love sense, until great depth of feeling flows between you. But if you have a good relationship with the remaining person who has stayed, then someone will be evoked. You can invite someone, whatever. Someone will show up accordingly. That's what I would do. Or just stimulate the remaining point until that happens. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Antoinette, for that question. These are practical questions, okay, and they do have to be answered. Look, we really have to get this thing going. Every place all over the world, people who know something about the triangles really feel the pressure to do it, because it is an inner structure of salvation, if I can call it that. There's just so much nonsense going on in the world, and it's all because people think they are one thing when they're really something else, you know. And we're caught in our lower elemental square. We have to now. Yeah, it's interesting that DK talked about how he once worked with a sage. I bet that was Pythagoras, to tell you the truth, who taught him to esoterically bisect the square. Okay, you know, going back to Euclidean geometry, probably what we're having there is we're drawing a diagonal and we're making two triangles out of one square. I'm sure there are deep implications to it, but we have to, in our daily life, think in terms of triangles, so close to Master DK's heart, and we know we will be doing something to help save humanity from its lower elemental nature, over which victory has not yet been achieved. So, you know, we we persist, and the practical things have to be answered. The people have to be known. You can also occasionally get on webinars with people, or rather what I call Skype calls, and where you can meditate together for 5, 10 minutes, whatever, visualizing your triangle, charging up, stimulating your triangle. There's all kinds of practical ways to make this whole thing a very living process. So that's my response, Antoinette. Thank you for the practical question. Okay, other statements or questions, friends? Anything further that you would like to say? And you know, look, another thing. Don't worry about Master DK's books being sometimes quite abstract. The amazing thing about them is that whatever you learn in one book will aspect or touch upon or enlighten or illumine something you learn in another book until the whole, all the books are interrelated. It doesn't make any difference where you start, and a great sphere of light is the result of your specialized studies here and there. You know, I haven't read this, I haven't read that. Okay, but everything is coming together to produce this great sphere of illumination. So whatever he says, it will touch upon something else which has to be illuminated. Okay, I hear a movement. Anything else there, Brett? Do you see anything else? Okay.
Not at the moment.
Okay. And silence reigned. Okay. So I'll tell you what, let's do. This will be the end of what we do for today. But we'll have a little meditation. Just a little one. Okay. Excuse me. Okay. Let's see where I am. Where am I? Who am I? What am I? That's the big question. Okay. So, what we will do is all reach out towards each other as if we were on the plane of soul, as if we were hovering on the mental plane with the mind held steady in the light, and we could make that transition into this world of light and love and power. We could be within the causal body, or we could be within the illumined personality. We could go across the bridge, across that dotted line separating the fourth subplane from the third. And we're all related to each other in a relationship of light, flowing between all the points of us who are gathered here. And the love and goodwill flow between us. We can visualize that. And the will to good, well, it will come. Come into the group. I'm hearing some sound. Brett, is there anybody that has to be canceled there or muted?
I'll check.
Okay, thank you. So, within this field of light and love and power in which we are related, we think of it as related to this growing triangles network all over the world, in which people are connected in this way, using those three factors, or at least two of them right now, the light and the love or goodwill. We visualize the network subjectively covering the earth. All kinds of people with depth of feeling connected in the soul energy as it reflects itself in a soul-infusing personality. And within this network, our own little relations may be few, but they contribute. So think of the people who are in the triangles with you. Just send these energies to them right now as you visualize them. And try to feel with depth of feeling the light flowing between you and connecting to the network and the love expressed as goodwill, love in action, flowing in your little network and out into the wider network. And in the midst of the whole thing, as if in the very center of a transparent earth, we see the Christ and his hierarchy. The Christ blessing the whole process and the hierarchy formed as a five-pointed star. And this energy flows out to such as we are and stimulates the light within us, stimulates the love and goodwill within us, and for those who can bear it, the will to good stimulated within us. And this is a real process. And we are connected with these sources. And we do make our contribution, and the network is getting stronger and stronger all the time, as it must do, with each one of us undertaking our responsibility in it. And then visualizing the network and our own little network, and with light and love and goodwill and even the will to good flowing through us, we will sound the great invocation in English together. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, I'm very happy we've had a chance to move forward. We will continue. It's a huge study, and the study should underlie the simplicities and directness of the practical work. Then we have a balanced situation, and we know how important the triangles are in all planetary, solar systemic, and cosmic process. So thank you for showing up. And tonight, at 5 p.m. GMT, we will have some work with invoking the soul of nations. It's certainly needed. And then tomorrow, Sunday, at 5 p.m., attracting money for hierarchical purposes. Tuya and I are working with this ASK program and expanding it so we can keep our, along with other groups, our meditative presence, subjectively empowering better results on the outer or physical plane. So just to say goodbye to you. Brett, I'll start from the top with this unmuting, and you can work from the bottom there, and I know that I just want to say it's a lot of noise.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night and good day, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your presence, and we'll see you on the next occasion, and in a couple of weeks we'll do this again. So, blessings, everyone, and thanks for attending, and thank you, staff, for your help, Brett and Joe. Okay, we'll see you soon. Bye bye.
Namaste.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.